When we last met, we had began Perek Yud, and we talked about the expression "Shema Shlomo L'Shem Hashem." We mentioned a number of different possibilities. Some say the Shema Hashem meant that she had heard that the Chochmah of Shlomo was directly from Hashem, was miraculous in nature, and very different from any other human chachmah. A second shot was that he used it, l'shem Hashem, which was highly unusual. People who have unusual talents and skills tend to use them for their own benefit. And Shlomo was doing this, l'shem Hashem, and she had trouble believing that. And a third explanation was that this chachmah was told to her, came because he was l'shem Hashem. In other words, a person who's dabek by Hashem will increase their chachma. The Medrash on this pasuk says, "Umalchus shva shoma'as," that we find that when Klal Yisrael is on the upswing, the nations of the world become impressed. It's by Yishma Yisrael. And when Klal Yisrael went out of Mitzrayim, you have the expression by Yishma Yisrael. We mentioned just in this week's parsha, and we have the Shira, Kishama Kol Ha'am. I'm sorry, that's not in the Shira. The Shama Yigazu, and then you have in Sefer Yeshua, Kishama Kol Ha'am, that in the time of Yeshua, so the reputation spreads. Like today, we live in a world of advertising, PR. Nothing works, you know, without publicity. Since there's no advertising campaign, Shlomo didn't have any advertising campaigns. It happened by itself. But that's, you have to be Zalka for that. But the, I used to joke that today, you know, we're not too far away from the day that we're going to have the Lamed Vavnik Society for the 36 hidden tzaddikim, and each one will have a press agent, and we'll have elections. You know, I'm running for president of the Lamed Vavnik Society, but there's no such thing. Everything has to be promoted. But Bamis is that if a person is Zolcha, we're really doing things properly by Yishma, they're here on their own. So she decided to come and test Shlomo, bechidos, with riddles, with challenges, because we'd all like to know what those riddles were. So there are I actually thought there would probably be dozens of these things in the Medrash and so on. There were a few. I'll mention one, maybe two. I couldn't quite get the word straight in one of the Medrashim. I get the general idea, but it said that she took a whole bunch of girls and boys and dressed them, little kids, dressed them identically, same haircuts, everything, and asked Shlomo to figure out who was who. So he threw them candies, and again, I couldn't quite tell by the measure, but the way they picked it up revealed who were the boys and the girls, because the girls were more dainty. They didn't pick up the candies with their hands. They used a napkin, and the boys grabbed it with their hands. There's something to that effect, so that you could tell who was who. The what?
It was enough
rough. It could be. So the boys got the candies, the girls were lying on the floor crying. but that's not what it says in the Medrash, but then another example given in the Medrash is that she asked Shlomo, let me see if I get this right. What goes out in seven, what comes in seven, goes out in nine, have two people preparing the drinks and one person drinking. So she said, that's a human child. After the 7 days of Nida, that's when a woman becomes fertile. Then there are 9 months of pregnancy. And then there are two Shadayim, two breasts that provide the drinks, and one child that drinks, unless you have twins. But so these are some of the examples in the Medrash. Clearly, though, there was a lot going on. It wasn't a couple of riddles. There was a whole process going on. We'll see in the Psukim what Shlomo did that really impressed her had really beyond answering the riddles. Let's take a look at what happens. So Malkus Sheva comes with her entourage. Vatava Yerushalayma, and she came to Yerushalayim. B'chayil Kaveima, with a great multitude of soldiers part of her guards, whoever accompanying her. Gemalim, with camels, Nosim Besom, and carrying spices with Zob and gold, Rab Ma'od. Ve'evin Yekar, and precious jewels. Vatava El Shlomo, and she came to Shlomo. And she spoke to him, everything that was in her heart. Now the question is, why was she bringing all this money? Okay, that she bring all the people, the Chel Gadol, that we understand. You come with an entourage, you don't come, a queen doesn't come by herself, she has all her servants and all their guards and all the staff. You know, when even today, we don't really have royalty, but when the president travels, and there's a whole group of people that travel with him, between the secret servant agents and all the logistic people. I remember I once had a little bit of a glimpse of what goes on in this. When President Reagan was running for re-election, there was a group, that organized group of Jews for Reagan. That was what it was called, a Jewish group that was supporting Reagan. And it was, not exclusively, but it was definitely a strong Orthodox presence in that group. And there was a fellow who was very involved in that group that was my father knew, lived in Queens. And through him, we actually got three tickets to Reagan, was speaking to a Jewish audience in New York. So I got one of the three tickets, but I made the mistake of coming only about an hour before the scheduled speech. You couldn't get in. I said, but I have a ticket. So the guy laughed at me. He said, they give us three times as many tickets as there are spaces. And he says, you have to understand, the point, what is the point of such a rally? He says, you think the point of such a rally is for Reagan to speak to these people? For him, that's a total waste of time. Because whoever comes to this rally is voting for him anyway. So what do we need to speak to him for? The whole point of the rally is to get to speak to an enthusiastic crowd so you can get pictures and sound bites for the evening news. And that's PR. So you have to have an image. You must have an overflow crowd. So that the picture should be a packed audience with people waiting outside. That's the picture on television. And then everyone cheers and they have a 30-second sound bite and it makes it, and then you've accomplished your purpose. You speak, and look how enthusiastic the Jews are supporting Reagan. But the people who actually are there, he was right, just because I didn't get in, you think I didn't vote for Reagan? But then, so I was talking to this fellow who helped organize it. He knew to come 2 hours early, so he got in. But he was talking about what they did before he came, before the president came, with the security teams and the logistic teams. And they had the group that actually timed, the distance, exactly the route from the airport to this, how long it would take, and how long to go back, so it fits into his schedule, and which direction he comes into the building, which direction he comes out of the building, no blind corners, somebody could be hiding behind a corner, it's security risk, and the whole business, and it comes with this whole entourage, in and out. You don't travel by yourself when you're the president, you're the queen. But why all the money? Now, in the end, she gave a good chunk of it to Shlomo. But she didn't come with that intention because she was suspicious. She came because she didn't believe the stories that she heard. So she really was not expecting to find out that they were more than true. She was expecting to find out that they were false. She wanted to satisfy herself that the stuff was exaggerated. So why did she come with all that money? So the Mefarshim say, apparently, it was considered derech kavod. This was not just to come with a lot of people. To come with a lot of money too. Today, you have to have your limousines. President won't drive. A little subcompact. It's got to be a big limo. So in a similar way, it was chashivas. There's gold. There's jewels. You come with the money itself was considered derech kavod. So the queen is traveling the way it's supposed to be with an entourage, with the money, with the entire operation. She left with a lot less than she came with. We'll get to that later. Now, the expression at the end of the pasuk is kind of interesting. It says, "Vatadabra elav es kol asher b'levava." She spoke to him everything that was in her heart. What's the expression, "kol asher b'levava"? He was in her heart. So the Metzudas explains that she had all these different questions she was going to ask Shlomo, riddles, challenges, etc. She didn't tell anybody what it was. She kept it in her heart because she was afraid of leaks. She didn't want anybody, even in her own entourage, to know what she was going to ask Shlomo, so it shouldn't leak out, and then Shlomo would get a heads up and either know the answer or be able to have more time to think about it. She wanted to catch Shlomo for sure, you know, unprepared, and let's see how he could deal with these questions, with these challenges. The Malbim says, and this is really connected with the next pasuk as well. Maybe we should read the next pasuk actually. She said to maybe Hashem Levava, look at pasuk Gimel. Vayagila Shlomo is called Varev, and Shlomo told her all her things, whatever she raised, every issue she raised, Shlomo answered. There was nothing hidden from the king, where he did not tell her. The Malbim says that there is, every time, or at least usually, when a person speaks, there's really two levels to the communication. There's what you say, and there's what's in your heart. Very often, they're not the same. Sometimes on purpose, and sometimes not on purpose. But there are certain feelings that a person has, or thoughts that a person has, that he's not really expressing. But it is possible sometime to be tuned into them and figure them out. Shlomo had this unusual chachma that he was able to tell what's in her heart, not only what she said. So she thought she's talking with her mouth. She didn't realize she was talking with her heart as well. But Dami Milavava and Vayagila, everything. Shlomo was able to tell not only what you told me, what you're thinking, and your machshavas as well. This is what really impressed her and made her see that Shlomo's wisdom was beyond normal wisdom. And if it sounds a bit strange to you, I think we have that now, obviously, to the level. This is not nevuah, by the way. This is chachma. It's chachma Shlomo. It could be figured out, and we have this in later generations. It's said, Reb Chaim Vital testifies about the Arizal. He says that you could come to him and he would tell you what you're thinking. He could tell you what you're thinking. He says, and it was not al pi Kabbalah. He says, you didn't use Kabbalah for such purposes. It's usher. You're not allowed to. It was his chachma. He was able to tell an expression on your face, whatever it is that he was able to pick up on and be able to tell. He says, Sher B'Lubava. And I'll tell you a few contemporary stories so we could get a little glimpse of what this is all about. Although, obviously, what Shlomo did was way beyond that. A little bit of a timely maisa. You know, this past week was the Levaya of Rav Shmuel Berenbaum. Is it Zal the Rosh Yeshiva Mir? When I was in Florida, he used to come to Florida. This man in Mir ended at Rosh Chodesh Nissan. And then he used to come to Florida for a few days. He used to do a fundraiser for the Yeshiva and he used to stay, rest up a little bit. He had a Talmud who used to live in Miami. He started this minhag. Even after that person moved out, he continued. So he used to stop by the Yeshiva. We used to go to Hay Nissan. So he'd come by the Yeshiva. When he found out there was a Yeshiva in town, he'd drop by. Spend a morning, sometimes two mornings in the yeshiva, and talk to the boys and learning. This happened, by the way, even when we didn't have a base management. In the early years, all we had was a high school. One year, all we had was the highest grade we had was 10th grade. He'd sit there with the 10th graders, talking and learning, like all excited. You looked at him, you think he was learning with the chavrusa, and back and forth with these 10th graders. And it was a big thing, you know, it was a big highlight for the kids. He didn't speak English that well, but he managed to communicate with these kids. One year, there was a fellow who used to learn in the Beis Medrash in the morning. He was not a Talmud, an adult. And it happened to be that that guy had some major issues going on in his life at that time. Anyway, I come into the Beis Medrash in the morning. He had come for davening. I assumed to find him in the Beis Medrash. He's not there. A little surprised, you know, because that's always where he went. I looked around. I see in the teacher's lounge, he's sitting with this fellow. He's talking to him. So after they were finished, he was there for a couple of hours. After he was finished, so I asked him, like, what happened? Why were you speaking to this fellow? He says, well, I see him every year in the Beis Medrash, and his face didn't look good. He didn't have the same look on his face this year like he usually did. So I asked him if he has any problems, anything bothering him. Does he want to talk? He said yes. So I sat down and I talked to him. So he picked up, again, he sees the man once a year. And he picked up, there was something wrong. And he sat and spoke to him. By the way, Derech Agav, you know, Rav Shmuel was known for his tremendous hasmada and learning and everything else. People don't realize, okay, good, but when he saw that somebody needed, you know, somebody to talk to, he went and talked to him. He didn't go into the Beis Medrash, at least not until later. So that is an interesting thing. But he picked up just from the expression on his face. A number of years ago, when I was in Eretz Yisrael, so there was a friend of mine in the yeshiva who was a relative of a fellow by the name of Rav Nosson Shulman. Rav Mordechai Shulman, who was a Talmud of Slabatka, was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Slabatka Yeshiva in Bnei Brak. Rav Nosson was his son, and he was also one of the Rosh Yeshivas there at the time. Later he left the yeshiva, he wanted to start his own yeshiva, it didn't really work out, but he was there at the time. So we got an invitation to go to his house for Shabbos. We went to his house for Shabbos, come into the Beis Medrash Friday night for davening. Some fellas come over, Shalom Aleichem, how you doing, you know. He said, so where are you, you're visiting? He said, yeah, where are you staying? So we're staying by Rav Nosson Shulman. They look at us, you're staying in his house? So I said, yeah, for Shabbos? He said, yeah. And they're like, what's the matter? I would never stay in this house for Shabbos. He says, why not? He says, you talk to him for 5 minutes and he tells you all your problems. He knows everything about you. Who wants that? Now, I don't know if he knew all my problems, and he didn't really do that to me. Maybe because I wasn't at the top of the yeshiva, but he had this reputation. We're afraid that you'd speak to him for 5 minutes and he already knew all your problems. You know, what he told me, he didn't tell me, picked it up. New ones. One more story with our Rosh Yeshiva. We were involved once, there was an incident, I can't get into too many details, but it was an incident in the community that was a very unfortunate, difficult kind of issue, and we got involved to help a certain person, but that person was not entirely satisfied with what we were doing. He felt we should have done more. He had all kinds of tightness. He used to complain to us. We mentioned it to the Rosh Hashiva a number of times. He felt it was all right. Anyway, the Hashiva was coming to Miami. He insisted he wanted an appointment with the Rosh Hashiva. He says, okay. Have an appointment with the Hashiva. So he goes in. He meets with the Hashiva behind closed doors for about 20 minutes. He comes out. He looked like he was shell-shocked. He comes out like this, like a zombie. He goes, the man has Ruach HaKodesh. I say, what happened? I came in before I said a word. He said to me, I know what you're going to say, and you're right, but let me tell you a story. And he told him a story that hit exactly to the point that he was going to say. I never got a chance to say anything. To this day, this fellow's like a chassid of the Rosh Hashiva. So afterwards, I asked the Rosh Hashiva, how did the Rosh Hashiva know what he was going to say? So I said, listen. The Rosh Hashiva said, listen. If it was just to rehash all the tightness that he had until now, he wouldn't have been so insistent to have an appointment. Because he knows that you've been talking to him, you've been relaying the message, so what? He has to tell me himself. He's so eager that it means he came up with a new chap. He thinks he came up with a new angle. So I figured out what could be the new angle. So I said, wasn't that dangerous? And what if you missed it? He said, no, I was pretty sure. I could tell. So it's a Vaidabish and Shobababa. He has something in his mind. He didn't even get a chance to say he already knows what it is. But it isn't Ruach HaKodesh. At least I don't think so. Maybe it's just, you know, I don't think it's Ruach HaKodesh. It's Chachma. But with this type of chokmah, you can often figure out what the person isn't saying. What's bilvava. And this is what Shlomo did on a far grander scale to Malkus Shva. And you know, he was, in a certain sense, reading her mind. Figuring out. She said one thing. He figured out all the other things that were behind it, and nuances and what and there. And he had her whole psychological profile and revealing all her hidden secrets. And she was duly overwhelmed by the Chachma of Shlomo. Now, in Pasuk Gimel, looking a little more precisely in the language, so So it says, "Vayaged lo Hashem es kol dvareha." He told her everything. Lo hayadaver nela min amelach asher lo higidla. So it's a double expression. He told her everything. That means there wasn't anything missing. So you could either say he told her everything, or you could have said nothing's missing. So what is the double lashon? So the Kli Yakar says that it's not only that he told her everything, but there was nothing nela min amelach that he couldn't tell her right off the bat. Sometimes, you know, you can ask a question and make the person think, ponder it. You know, it's right off the bat. I remember hearing from Rabbi Rosenblatt, you know, in the Rabbi Yaakov Rosenblatt in the Keser Torah, says he went to Rav Aaron Cutler years ago. He went to Lakewood for a while, and he had this whole, you know, thing that he was working on, a sugi he was working on, and he got a chance to ask. So he spoke to Rav Aaron Cutler, and he asked him a kasha, maybe it was a shiva's kasha, I don't remember what it was. He asked him a kasha. And within 2 seconds, Rav Aaron had a whole mahalach answer the kasha. So he was a little bit depressed. You know, like, here he had this whole thing working, and it took him 2 seconds to answer it. So somebody, one of the talmidim, was standing around and says, "Wow, this must have been a starka kasha." So what do you mean? He answered it in 2 seconds. He said, "Yeah, but usually he starts answering it before you even finish the question." So you got to finish the entire question. He had to wait 2 seconds. That's a good question. So that's what Shlomo HaMelech did. Like instantaneously, before she finished the question, there was the answer. It wasn't hidden from him, even temporarily, even for a moment, that he had to think about it. The story is told of the Shagas Aryeh and the Vilna Gaon. The Shagas Aryeh was actually older than the Vilna Gaon. And he was very chashuv gadol, a rav, but he started hearing the reports about this Vilna Gaon. So he decided he wants to see who this man is and wants to find out more about him. So he decided to travel to Vilna, you know, to talk to the Vilna Gaon. So he was traveling. It wasn't so easy to travel in the 1700s, you know, in Europe by wagon, horse, whatever. It's a nice, and he wasn't such a youngster. It was a very difficult trip, and he ended up sleeping overnight in a town that was a few miles away from Vilna. Couldn't make it all the way there in one shot. Next morning, he got a wagon driver to take him to Vilna, and he shared the wagon with another person, and he starts talking to the other person. The other person, "What are you doing to Vilna?" He's also going to see the Vilna Gaon. "Why do you want to see him?" He says, "I want to ask him a kasha." "So what kasha?" So he told him, "Shagas Aryeh, now I don't know the name of the town. So we'll give it a name. What name should we call it? Any town, Europe?" So it's any town. It's a couple of miles. It took whatever amount of time it took, a half an hour to travel. So they're traveling to Vilna, and he asked him this kasha. He didn't have an answer to Shagas Aryeh. He's thinking about it. They get to the Vilna Gaon's house. So the Shagas says, "You could go in first." So he goes in, comes out. When the fellow comes out, he says, "I have a teretz to your kasha." Shagas Aryeh said to him. So he said, "Okay, what's the teretz?" So he told him. So he said, "You should know the Vilna Gaon gave me the same teretz. But the difference between you and the Vilna Gaon is the distance from any town to Vilna. Because it took you an hour to come over the teretz, and the Vilna Gaon said it instantly." So, alright. So the Shagas Aryeh comes in to speak to the Vilna Gaon, and he asks him a kasha that he had on the Gemara in Shabbos. And the Vilna Gaon is thinking. And he's thinking. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. Now, after getting the report from this other person, how they answered instantaneously, here he gets him to think for 20 minutes. He says, "Wow, you know, like, I must have." Then the Vilna Gaon says to the Shagas Aryeh, he says, "I'll answer your question. But before I answer your question, I want to tell you all the questions you had in Seder Moed that you couldn't answer, that you left Shver." And that's what took him the 20 minutes. And he starts, goes through Shabbos and the Erevin and so on and so forth. And he tells him all the kashas that he left Shver in Seder Moed. So the Shagas Aryeh is five guys. "What are you, a Navi? How could you know?" So he said, "I saw this, analyze this question, and based on this question, I figured out your mahalach in learning. And according to that mahalach, these are the questions that are shver in Seder Moed." So that's what took him 20 minutes. The answer probably he had in a second. Of course, by the way, you should realize this says something about the godless of the Shagas Aryeh as well. Because I think if one of us went to the Vilna Gaon, he'd never be able to do that. First of all, he wouldn't know which Masechtas and Seder Mor I learned and which Masechtas I didn't learn. But besides that, the only way you could do this is if you assume that the Shagas Aryeh didn't make any mistakes. You can have a mahalach in learning, but a lot of the questions we have are because we missed a step in the cheshbon, we made a mistake, we were missing a certain yidia, and therefore we had a question, but it wasn't really a good question. You know, so how could a person know what mistakes I'm going to make unless he's a navi? But since Shagas Aryeh was a gadol, he didn't really make mistakes. It's just that according to this way of thinking, this is taka problem. That's why the Vilna Gaon had a shot at figuring out. So he obviously knew, you know, the Shagas Aryeh was a gadol. That's how he was able to do that. But that's the pshat. And they say, you know, so he was impressed. So the Shagas Aryeh said if he was younger, he'd leave, I forgot what city he was in, and go to Vilna and learn by the Vilna Gaon. But he was already, you know, an old man. It was a little too difficult for him to do that. But the pshat is that this type of chachma, which is, you know, beyond the norm, to be able to figure out and instantly, without any hesitation, this is also what Shlomo showed Malkus Shva. Pasuk Dalin. Vatera Malkus Shva, the queen of Shva, saw is called Chachmas Shlomo, all the wisdom of Shlomo. Vabayis Hashabon, and the house that he built, the palace, the Beis HaMikdash. So there are really two aspects to what she saw. She saw the wisdom that he said, answering all the questions, answering them instantly, being able to tell her what she was thinking, figuring out the whole Mahalakha Makshava, whatever it is that he did. But she also saw the visible signs of his Chachma. She saw the way he built the palace, the way he built the Beis HaMikdash, and there was Chachma involved in that. And the implication is that if a person has what we would call today, I guess, theoretical, you know, we have today certain scientists, they're theoretical scientists, they're big chachamim, you know, in the abstract and the conceptual things, but they can't do anything practical with that chachma. Then you have different people, then maybe not such big chachamim, but they could take it and apply it. You have specialties, theoretical sciences and the engineers. Shlomo did both. Shlomo had the chachma, but he also was able to apply it. That's without that, she maybe wouldn't have been as impressed. And she saw how he applied it, Lamaisa, to create all these structures and whatever it is that he did with tremendous chachma. What else did she see? Says the Pasuk, hey, Umachal Shulchano, and the food on his table, Umoshav Avadav, and the sitting places of his servants, Umamud Misharsav, and the standing of his also his waiters, his helpers, those who serve him, umabushem, and their clothing, umashkav, and their drinks, v'alasa shayala beis Hashem, and the karbanos that he brought to the Beis HaMikdash, lahaya ba'od ruach, and she no longer had any ruach, any spirit, any feeling of you know, that she came with a certain haughtiness, a certain feeling. There's no way Shlomo was going to be smarter than me. There's no way that he's as good as they say he is. And she was totally deflated. And totally overwhelmed. So what are all these things that are added besides the fact that Shlomo answered all the riddles, and besides the fact he was able to tell what she was thinking, and besides the fact that he built this tremendous palace with such chokhmah? She also saw the way he operated it. And the Mefarshim discussed this in different ways. The foods were all, you know, he had the nutrition chart. You know, they were the healthiest foods. Everything was done in the most efficient manner. There was a division of labor. People had uniforms, so you could tell right away who had what job. That's the Malbusha. And everything was in the right place. She saw the olos to the Beis HaMikdash. The Mefarshim explained that he made a special walkway from his palace to the Beis HaMikdash. When he wanted to bring karbanos, he could go straight through. This is also a new concept. Nobody ever done that before. Today we have all these, you know, malls with the walkways and the connections. Shlomo was the first one to do that. The idea of division of labor. People give credit to Henry Ford. Came up with this tremendous Einfall and made him millions of dollars. It was a tremendous Einfall, but he should have learned this pasuk. He could have come up with it earlier. That's what Shlomo HaMelech did. the division of labor. Everyone's a specialist. Each one has his own place. So these were the things that in addition to everything else, that she saw. So she saw the theoretical Chachma. She saw how he was able to almost as if to read her mind. But it was all b'chachma. She saw the practical Chachma, the buildings that he built. And now the operational. He was a CEO as well. Right? Again, you have people who come up with all the inventions, but then they don't know how to market it, they don't know how to manage it, how to produce it. Right? He could do that too. There was nothing missing from Shlomo's Chachma. And the pasuk concludes, "V'lo haya ba'od ruach." She no longer had a ruach. So what does that mean? So Kli Yakar says that she no longer had ruach hatuma, ruach hacheres. She gave up her avodah zara and was mekabel Hashem. Now, according to that pshat, one needs to explain what is the link. Okay, so she's impressed by Shlomo's tremendous chachma. Why does that mean I have to be mekabel Hashem? I want to be mekabel Shlomo, that I understand. But what is the link? Why is it just because she was so impressed by the enormous chachma of Shlomo that she was mekabel Hashem? Some say she was megayer. Others say she became what we call a ger toshav, that she accepted a Kodesh Baruch in the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, but she wasn't actually megayeres. But what motivated her to do that? So I would offer a couple of possibilities. One possibility is, we remember again at the beginning of the parsha, we said that this chachma of Shlomo was in a certain way supernatural. Either it came as a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it came from being davek by Hashem, he was using Hashem Shemayim. Whatever it is, when she saw this, she says, this is a visible sign of the Yad Hashem. This is not normal. This is not, so it's a gift. So I see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestows upon people who serve him. She wanted to serve Hashem as well. So it was in a sense almost the same thing as witnessing a miracle. If you witness a miracle, a person could be inspired by that to be mekabel O Malchus Shemayim. So this was, in a sense, witnessing a miracle. Another possibility, and they may both be true, is it gives a lot of credibility. If this person is so brilliant, is such a genius in every way, and he accepts Hashem, then I should accept Hashem too. And it's a very powerful argument. No, in fact, you know, it is, I think, one of the arguments. You know, the people in cure business use this as well, but it's an argument we ourselves should realize, that if you ever have the opportunity to speak to Gedolei Torah and to see their chachma, their wisdom, and if they believe and they accept, that's a tremendous inspiration to us. Like, who are we to argue? And this chachma of Shlomo won her over. It seems to me, however, that the Targum might be learning this pasuk a little differently. It is not absolutely clear, but the way he translates the Ein Bo Ruach, so the Targum says, Lo Ishtar Ba'od Ruach. Right? She saw everything, the Masa Beit Mikdash and Hashem. She no longer had a spirit. There's not left within her a spirit. It doesn't sound to me that means she was Megayer, she accepted. It sounds more like she had no spirit left. She was deflated. And I think he may be learning more like originally said the pasuk, that she came in with a certain attitude of self-confidence, of maybe even arrogance, and saying, ha, can't be. She probably prided herself on being a chacham. Why did she think she could test Shlomo? Because she probably herself was a big chachama and very well-versed and well-learned. And she was convinced she's going to go and demolish this Shlomo in a debate, you know. And she just had the floor wiped with her. Beyond anything, there was nothing to say. So all of that arrogance and all of that pride was totally deflated. L'hayu ba'od ruach. And Memela, maybe that it may be that they're not really arguing on the outcome, because we see later she seems to have accepted Hashem. But this pasuk is talking about the psychological attitude. And one of the barriers to accepting all Malchus Shamayim is gaiva, is arrogance. And there's a story told, I don't know if it's true and it doesn't really matter, of an individual, I don't know their names anyway, so what's the difference? But there is a fellow who used to try to make it his business that on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, he wanted to daven next to a tzaddik. He felt that it would rub off on him, maybe his tefillahs could kind of slip in, you know, whatever it was. So in this hometown, where usually it was home for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, he knew who was who, and he picked whoever it is he wanted to daven next to. But one year he had been forced to travel, and he got stuck out of town Yom Kippur. So he didn't know. What's he supposed to ask? Who's a tzaddik in town? So what he decided to do is on Kol Nidre night, he had no Eitzel, but he's going to look around and see who really is davening with Kavana and everything else, and try to pick out somebody to stand next to in davening. So he sees a person with the tears flowing down his eyes, is really into the davening, and he seems to be more than anybody else in the shul, and he feels, oh, this is the guy. So Yom Kippur morning, I guess it wasn't today, like today you have to buy your seats in advance, you know, you're lucky if they let you in. But it seemed to be a little bit more laid back. So he comes and he's sitting next to this guy, standing next to this guy, davening. Comes time for Kriyas HaTorah, and they give the fellow an aliyah, but they gave him Revi, not Shlishi. Shlishi is the more chashav aliyah. He starts yelling at the gabbai, what kind of business is this, giving me Revi? Should have given Shlishi. And he starts making a whole scene in the middle of Shul on Yom Kippur. So this visitor is devastated. Here he thinks he's sitting next to a tzaddik and the guy's complaining about the aliyahs and making a scene, and finally they mollify him, who knows what, the rub got involved, the gabbai, this, that. And they manage to continue with the davening. Comes back after the aliyah, turns to him, the visitor turns to him, I don't understand. I myself saw you with the tears flowing down your cheeks, saying, Me'anu, Me'chazdenu, Ma'atzitkaseinu, Ma'agvuraseinu. What is all our accomplishments? Mosar adam min ha-behema ayin. The advantage of man over beast is nothing. Ki ha-kol havel. And now you're arguing in the middle of Shul on Yom Kippur whether you get Revi and you get Shlishi? So he turns to him and says, I don't understand. What's your kasha? When you saw me, you know who I was talking to? I was talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I agree, compared to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Me'anu, me'chazdenu, ma'atzitkaseinu. But compared to that bum... However, the story notwithstanding, the reality is this is not true. When a person is a Balgaiva, he's a Balgaiva to HaKadosh Baruch Hu too. Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Gevah Lev, Ein ani v'ata dar b'mechitza achas. You and I can't live within the same fence. This town ain't big enough for the two of us. A person who is Magaiva, believe it or not, he may not express it, but he feels it. He feels it vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. V'ram levavecha v'shachachta es Hashem elokecha. The pasuk says. So that an impediment, a barrier, for truly accepting all Malchus Shemayim is gaiva, is arrogance, is pride. And it's not just vis-a-vis the other person. It affects HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And somehow a person has the emotional capacity to feel himself in a certain way. So why do I have to listen to God? Who does he think he is? That's actually what goes on in the inner recesses of the heart of a person afflicted with gaiva. So the process, it could very well be here with Malka Shva. She started off with a certain feeling of gaiva, pride in her own chachma. And it was so obliterated. You know, it's one thing if you lose the game by a close score, you could think of one break went this way, one break then that way, I could have won. Right? But you get wiped out. And no shaykhis. It uprooted. It was such an impact on her. She aimed lo haya ba'od ruach. The guy who was gone, the next step, a few psukim later, was Yehi Hashem Elokecha Baruch. She was able to accept the Ol Malchus Shamayim. So there is a reverse correlation. The more gaiva, the less Kabbalah Hashem. The less gaiva, the more Kabbalah Sol Malchus Hashem. Okay, we'll start the next pasuk. We'll see how far we get. Vatomer el haMelech, she said to the king, to Shlomo, Emes hoya davar asher shamati baratzi. It's true, the words that I heard about you in my land. Al varecha, about your words, al chach masecha. So from here we see very clearly that she really didn't originally believe the stories, and her real purpose of this trip was to prove to herself and to the rest of the world, perhaps, that she was really smarter than Shlomo. And now she finds out that Emes Hayadavar that she had heard, and we'll look in Pasuk Zayin below. Hamanti ladvarim, I didn't believe those words. Adasher basi batrene, until I came and I saw with my own eyes. Vehine lohu gadli hachetzi, and they didn't tell me even half the story. Hosafta chachma batov, you have increased your chachma and your good al hashmua sheshmati, beyond the shmua that I have heard. So she comes and says, not only was the stories that I heard true, it wasn't even half the story. You're much, much smarter. There's much, much more chachma than was told to me. What I heard wasn't even half. And you added more to it. Now there's a number of repetitions in the Pasuk Zion. There's also, if you take the Pesukim literally, now of course, we tend to give ourselves a certain poetic license, but we have to realize every word in Tanakh is measured. If you take it literally, we will find there's really a contradiction between the two Pesukim. Because the first Pasuk says, Emes haya adava she shamati ba'atzi. That implies that the Shmua that she heard was true. And now she's saying, Lahugali achetzi, otsafta. That means what she heard wasn't true. But in the other direction. It wasn't true. It wasn't even half the story. Half the story is not the truth. So what do you mean? You're saying it's MS, and then you say that it's not MS. It was really much more. So we'll, Mirza Shem, get involved next week in some of the breakdown of the Pesukim, understand what she meant was true, and what was not even half, and what was hasafta.
I've got to ask you a little for one second.